1101B. Good morning. Thanks for listening and for downloading. You've queued up an audio version of Offbeat Oregon History du jour, a daily RSS podcast feed brought to you by the Offbeat Oregon History weekly newspaper column. Each day we bring you a new story from our archives, stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghai'd sailors and Skid Row bordellos and pirates and robbers and unsolved mysteries and all kinds of other good stuff. You can get these either in the original text format or in an audio version, which is what you're listening to right now, identical to the text version, but with me reading it to you. Suitable for listening to in your car or any place like that. These podcasts are very simple. I don't use bumper music. I don't use radio assets. It's just me reading you the column. If they were a movie, these podcasts would be rated PG, just like the newspaper columns and pretty much everything else, except maybe for the Twitter feed every now and then. Most people will find them suitable for family listening. So today's podcast was originally broadcast, today's column was originally published on January 9th, 2011. Its headline, Shipwreck of Brother Jonathan is Ground Zero in Fight Over Treasure. The overview. Sidewheel steamer's sinking was a major maritime disaster for Oregon. Treasure hunters found the gold-laden wreck in 1993, touching off a squabble over salvage rights. And here's the article. On the afternoon of July 30th, 1865, three-year-old Charles Brooks burst into tears. Charles was staying with his grandparents in California's Napa Valley while his mother, Mrs. A.C. Brooks, and his aunt, Mary Place, journeyed to Portland. Charles had been perfectly happy there until a little after 2 p.m. when he suddenly melted down and could not be consoled. His puzzled grandparents did the best they could, but he wouldn't stop crying. And all they could get the little guy to say was something about his mother and Aunt Mary going down in water. More than 300 miles away, just off the Oregon-California border, Charles' mother and aunt were drowning, along with 223 of their fellow passengers on the sidewheel steamer Brother Jonathan in the cold waters of the North Pacific. And somehow, if the following week's Oregon Statesman newspaper, which is the source of this account, is to be believed, somehow little Charles knew. The Brother Jonathan was a 220-foot paddle-wheel-driven steamer, sidewheel as a matter of fact, built in 1851 in New York, and owned for some time by Cornelius Vanderbilt. Like many other East Coast steamers, it had been brought around the Horn during the latter days of the California Gold Rush. The Brother Jonathan became an important ship in Oregon history. In 1859, it was the Brother Jonathan that brought the message to Oregon that it had been admitted to the Union as a new state. This was especially symbolic since Brother Jonathan was, at the time, the name of an imaginary mascot for the United States, like Uncle Sam. So the shipwreck itself, the Brother Jonathan's last day in the sunlight came 6 years later. The steamer was on its way from San Francisco to Portland with 244 passengers and crew. On the way, a storm tormented the ship and eventually got bad enough that the captain, having gotten as far as Rogue River, decided to turn the ship around and bring her back to Crescent City for safety reasons. Probably shouldn't have done that, although hindsight is 20/20. Because on the way back, a particularly lusty wave picked the Brother Jonathan up high, and the following trough spitted the ship on an underwater, uncharted granite spire. It began to sink immediately. So the first of the Brother Jonathan's complement of Francis Patent metallic lifeboats, launched in the storm with about 40 people on board, had just pulled away from the wreck when a breaker roared over it. When it was next seen, it was upside down. The second lifeboat didn't even make it that far. A wave crushed it against the hull of the Brother Jonathan before the crew even got the oars out. The only survivors of this disaster were 19 people on a small surf boat that somehow made it to shore. As for the others, well, a classified ad in the daily San Francisco newspaper Alta California put the crassest possible epitaph on their watery graves. "We venture to say that everyone on board the Brother Jonathan would have been saved had they had had Houston, Hastings & Company life-preserving vests," it clucked. Considering that many of the bodies that washed up on Oregon and California beaches after the wreck were sporting life vests, this claim was certainly questionable and was in terrible taste. But there may have been something to it. At the time, many life preservers were stuffed with tulle, which provided minimal flotation and eventually became waterlogged, but had the advantage of being remarkably cheap and looking like it would work. I haven't been able to learn if the Brother Jonathan came equipped with tulle-stuffed life vests or not, but in water as cold as the North Pacific, it's almost an irrelevant question, because in 50-degree water, cold is the real killer of shipwreck victims. That's why you don't see people floating ashore from shipwrecks clinging to wreckage, usually. They freeze and fall off before they make it. So, was the ship overloaded? A common version of this story has the captain of the Brother Jonathan noticing that the ship was dangerously overloaded but sailing anyway after being told that he'd be relieved of his command if he did not. Now, this is possible, but I have not been able to find any credible original sources for it, and it would be utterly out of character for a captain of a major passenger ship to allow this kind of interference with his command. And it would not be easy to find a commanding officer to replace one who had quit under these conditions. So after the wreck, the beach was littered with debris washed up on shore, including the ship's wheel, which you can now see. It's proudly displayed in the lobby of Dan and Lewis Oyster Bar in Old Town, Portland. But plenty of other things didn't wash up on shore at all. In the hold of the Brother Jonathan was a substantial shipment of gold intended to buy off the territorial claims of a number of Native American tribes. Of course, gold, typically not something that floats ashore after a shipwreck. In this case, no exception. Naturally, treasure hunters wasted very little time getting to the scene, or at least what they thought might be the scene. And for well over a century, nobody got anywhere with these efforts. The range of ocean in which the ship might have gone down pretty much extended from Crescent City all the way up to the mouth of the Rogue River. Nobody knew for sure exactly where it was. The debris field wasn't much help because it was all over the place. Well, in the 1930s, a fisherman actually pulled in his net and found a crumpled rusty mass in it, which turned out to be an old Francis Patton metallic lifeboat, if you remember those, and wedged under one of the seats, the fisherman claimed, was a rotten leather valise containing 22 pounds of gold. Now, I use the term claimed because something about this story isn't right. Leather just doesn't last 70 years in a 250 feet of seawater, especially not in a crab fishery. Leather is good to eat. Stuff eats it. 70 years? I don't think so. But unfortunately, private possession of gold was illegal at this time. So the fisherman, again allegedly, hid his find away. And by the time gold ownership was legalized again, he couldn't remember where he'd found it, or so he claimed. The whole thing, if the whole story about the fisherman and the gold and the Francis Patton metallic lifeboat lights up your BS buzzer just a little bit, that's good. That means it's working. It should. I'm not saying it's false. I'm just saying it's pretty sketchy. However, it wasn't until 1993 that a high-tech treasure hunting expedition found the wreckage of the ship in about 250 feet of water off the coast, touching off a legal argument over salvage rights to historic shipwrecks between the treasure hunters and the state of California, which turned out to possess the water in which the shipwreck was found. As nearly as they can figure, it sank off the coast of Oregon and drifted down and ended up off the coast of California. Even after the U.S. Supreme Court found in the treasure hunter's favor, though, the state persisted until it was bought off with a share of the treasure. And so now you can, in fact, purchase coins from the Brother Jonathan shipwreck. They're on the market today. You can get them at Austin Rare Coins and Bullion, and 20% of everything you buy goes straight to the state of California. That is our story for today. You've been listening to the shipwreck of the Brother Jonathan story, Ground Zero in a Fight Over Treasure, by Finn J.D. John, that would be me, first published on January 9th, 2011. If you'd like to see the art for this story, look online at www.offbeatoregon.com, where the articles are really easy to look up. They're listed in order of the date they were first published, so just look for January 2011, and it'll take you right to it. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.